touchdown machine for the Houston Cougars.
Sasser again, just kind of taking over right now.
That's NBA stuff right there. He is a baller.
Stick it in your pipe and smoke it, baby.
Yes! Welcome to Scott Bolin Podcast. I want to start tonight on a positive note by thanking you, the listener, whoever you are and wherever you are, for deciding in some form or fashion to listen to us talk about the latest action from the increasingly off the rails 2022 season of Houston Cougar football. At this point, we're too far out to call anything like, you know, an instant react or a quick react, but we'll definitely be doing plenty of reacting to Friday night's overtime loss to the Tulane Green Wave at TDCU Stadium. I don't know how many, if any, of the people who are listening and downloading are coming from people listening for Schadenfreude purposes. So if you are, you're still helping our metrics, and I do appreciate that. But as we get further and further into this football season, the two of us come back here on a Sunday or usually Monday after game day. It kind of feels like a Groundhog Day, and I'm not talking about the 1993 classic featuring Bill Murray, Andy McDowell, and numerous others, but I feel like I'm kind of stuck in a loop with these weekly football game react episodes. We come back here, we talk about a game where the Cougars spent most of it playing undisciplined on both sides of the ball, bereft of a good four-quarter offensive game plan, and completely baffled by any opposing offense that goes into something like a two-minute drill, and led by a head coach who looks more and more fed up by the game and doesn't ever project the outward calm that maybe you'd want the leader of this university's most public-facing and well-resourced athletic program to display. But Dustin, my friend and co-host, I'm sorry for being a bit more verbose than I usually am here at the top, but as I compose my thoughts and, you know, organize notes for this episode, I just felt like I was almost copy and pasting from our previous weeks and just having the same general takeaways and feeling like I'm slowly going insane. Just this week, we're talking about a different opponent doing the same stuff for the previous several weeks, but I guess it just really feels like this metaphorical train of a sports team isn't going to get back on the tracks, does it, Dustin?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, stranger things have happened, and I saw Donovan Newton saying after the game that, hey, you know, we have a decision if we want to wake up in the morning and make things better or make things worse, and I think that certainly all is true. But yeah, it just doesn't look like a football program that, you know, even just bereft of the results, just the way that the players and the coaches are talking, just it doesn't feel like a healthy program right now. And it's a program that, as I'm sure we'll talk about, has a head coach with a number of years left on his contract, so it might be in for the long haul. You know, we'll see how that goes. But you know, if there's what the path to being in a good place is for the near future, I'm not sure at the moment.
Me neither, Dustin. And though proud might not be the adjective we would use to describe our feelings towards the Cougar football program in the current season at this moment, it would describe how we feel about being a part of the 1012 network. If you haven't already, please follow them at TEN12 on network on Twitter. Subscribe to the 1012 podcast wherever you get podcasts, as well as a host of other great school-specific podcasts, including this very one. If you want to get some insight maybe into the, you know, great season both the state of Kansas programs are having right now, you're not going to find any better people covering Kansas and K-State football than our friends at Rock Chalk Podcast and Bosco's Boys, respectively. And of course, proud would also probably be the word, or one of the first words I would use to describe how I feel whenever I put on a comfortable vintage tee from our sponsors, Homefield Apparel at homefieldapparel.com. If you haven't already seen Homefield's 2022 Houston Cougar apparel refresh, I want you to stop what you're doing right now. You keep listening to this podcast, but all other tasks, stop them. Head on over to homefieldapparel.com. Check out a fantastic collection that includes multiple Sailor Cougar designs, multiple different UH logos, a great Phi Slamma Jamma tee also from their original UH collection, and much, much more. And you, the listener, you could save 15% off your first order just by typing in the promo code HOLMAN12, H-O-L-M-A-N-1-2 at checkout. You're going to save 15% on that first order. You don't even have to personally like me or Dustin or the sound of our voices. Just use that promo code HOLMAN12. Save yourself some dough. And I always say it here, but I really mean it. Homefield has an unbeatable collection, even outside of the Cougar world as well. The biggest names, but also great designs from schools that you probably won't see from any other apparel provider out there. So Homefield Apparel, homefieldapparel.com, promo code HOLMAN12. Improve your wardrobe with some fantastic Cougar gear and support our podcast in the process. So as much as I'd probably feel better about just doing a 35 to 40 minute home field infomercial here, that's probably not why you're listening to the show. And what you're listening for is probably the two of us talking about what we alluded to at the top, another incredibly frustrating Cougar football lost this past week to the Tulane Green Wave in a Friday night national televising of the kind of frustrating, uneven performances that we've seen for the past several weeks now, just for a bit bigger audience and a bit more isolated on Friday night. But, you know, get to the specifics, talk about, as we always do at the top, how the game was won, or unfortunately in this case, how the game was lost by your Houston Cougars. And the specifics in this one really just were depressingly familiar for what's happened this season so far. Neither team really came out of the gate strong. Tulane did keep their streak of not allowing any opponent points in the first quarter alive for another week. You could definitely tell the Green Wave were trying to figure out what they wanted to do offensively at times when their fill-in quarterback starter, Justin Abita, left the game hurt on the last or second to last play of their opening possession. Green Wave did eventually get on the board first in the early second quarter, had the help of a 30-yard completion to running back Tyjae Spears, which unfortunately would not be the last time the Cougar D didn't account for Spears in a big moment of the game, followed by a couple plays later, a touchdown from Kai Horton, their fill-in, their third-string quarterback, to Deuce Watts. Later in the second quarter, the Cougs took advantage of a Horton fumble pretty deep in Green Wave territory, eventually tied the game on a fourth and goal completion from Clayton Toon to Tank Dell. The game ended up tied 7-7 at the half. The Green Wave scored first in the second half thanks to Toon fumbling as he went to the ground. Round midfield, Tulane's Jalen Kennedy was just in the perfect spot, scooped the ball up, took it 57 yards to the end zone, put the Green Wave back up by touchdown. And it kind of felt like such a momentum killer at the time. The Cougar defense had just gotten off the field and fourth down in Cougar territory. The Cougs actually had a promising drive later on in the third quarter. At one point, the Cougars actually had the ball third and short at the Green Wave 20, but stop me if this sounds familiar, a critical penalty, this time holding by Jack Freeman, the center, turned that into a third and long, and a third and long that ultimately put the Cougars out of easy field goal range on fourth and long, ended in a 47-yard missed Bubba Baxter field goal. First possession of the fourth quarter, though, the Cougs did finally even up the score in a drive that I would say it was highlighted by a 41-yard completion on third down from Toon to Keyshawn Carter. Toon just delivered it right as he's getting leveled. I thought Carter did a good job being aware of his surroundings, getting back to the ball. Set the Cougars up nicely. Brandon Campbell ran it in from 1 yard out. Tied the game at 14. Cougar defense gets a three and out. Offense gets the ball back, has easily their best drive of the game. 10 plays, 80 yards. Finishing with a second connection of the night from Toon to Dell for a score. And maybe I was foolish at this point to feel this way, Dustin, but it felt like right at that moment, ugly as the game had been to that point, this Cougar team finally had some momentum. You finally, you know, saw them really, you know, clicking on both sides of the ball, and now all we need at this point was the Cougar defense to shut the door on an opposing offense in a later fourth quarter situation. But certainly, if you know, if you're listening, this did not happen. The Cougar defense let Tulane's third-string quarterback run a very successful 2.5-ish minute drill that ended in a fourth and goal touchdown pass to tie the game up with 39 seconds left. Pretty baffling last possession of regulation by the Cougars. Running the kickoff out, only got two more yards than a touchback, lost 7 seconds. Poor decision by Peyton Story to start, but the Cougars did get the ball near midfield after a nice completion to Tank Dell from Toon on the opening play, but in depressingly familiar fashion, U of H then called for holding, then called for a delay of game. After a meek dump-off pass, the Cougs ended regulation, taking a knee while the Cougar fans in attendance just lustily booed the proceedings, and Holgerson angrily shouted and gestured at the crowd. So, almost done here. Cougars get the ball first in overtime, able to get themselves actually into a third and short situation on just a play that inexplicably ended up being what I think was an attempted shovel pass to your backup tight end who has zero career Division I receptions. UH kicks the field goal. 3 plays later, Tulane wins the game on a pass from Horton to Tyjae Spears, who once again was inexplicably not covered from the backfield. Tulane wins 27-24. Cougars drop to 2-3. Dustin, where on earth do you want to start with this one?
Oh, man. That was a lot. It was kind of like you mentioned, just depressingly familiar. And I think my main takeaway from this, other than that, man, it's just it's not a lot of fun to keep showing up every week and then watch a lot of penalties. I mean, hey, less than 10 penalties in this one. Okay, 9 penalties was less than 10 penalties. We might still be, and in fact, we very much are the most penalized team in the country. But had a single digit penalty performance, so that's something to that's improvement. Dana Holgerson took some responsibility this week, clearly. But yeah, it's disappointing to obviously lose in exactly the same way, just going to overtime yet again and just not being able to stop the other team, go marching right down the field at the end of the game when they needed to yet again and all that yet again. Yeah, I think the thing that just more than anything else, just struck me as I was walking away from this game and walking to the car, leaving TDECU Stadium, is just like, that's what Tulane's going to remember us by. Like, as we leave to the Big 12, the Tulane's going to be like, hey, remember that team that that left after we beat them at their place with our third-string quarterback? Like, that's they're going to be their last the last Houston-Tulane matchup for the foreseeable future. That sucks, man. I was really hoping to see this season, you know, after a strong campaign last year, I was really hoping to see that be a springboard and finishing your final AAC campaign with a little bit of style. But going out on losses to Tulane, and let's be honest, probably some losses to some other teams coming up here, is not the way I really wanted to end our final campaign. And, you know, you kind of go in with the vision of, okay, you had the uneven non-conference, you know, you're going up a team's against the team's third string quarterback. Certainly, this is the chance to lay a positive campaign, positive foundation for a strong American Athletic Conference campaign. And not so much. Just instead, more of almost exactly eerily the same.
It's crazy that both our minds went to that place, because I was thinking about that too. I was thinking, UH has had some long winning streaks in this series. I think if you looked at the overall UH Tulane series, you know, the Cougars probably are best Tulane in most categories, but it doesn't matter. Like, Tulane got the last word in. The last word in was beating U of H on their home field with the third string quarterback, and U of H being unable to defend a 2-minute drill from said third string quarterback. I don't think we want to zoom in on this very much, but I think we should zoom in on the fact that just this was another dismal offensive game plan, where I think for the fifth week in five, you looked at your opponent and just, yeah, your opponent had a lot more imagination, had a lot more creative game plan. And I think something I wanted to zoom in on, this is something new, because, you know, we try to look at new things. Obviously, we're seeing a lot of the same things from, you know, week one to now, a lot of the same unpleasant themes. But I want to look at something new, and it's the opening script. And I think the results of each of these two teams that played on Friday night's first possession, I think, should have been a warning sign for Cougar fans. You know, Tulane started out with their second-string quarterback, Justin Abita, Michael Pratt, out for this game. And Tulane's opening script was very successful. And I think if Abita doesn't go out hurt on that last third-and-goal play, I don't know, Dustin. I think they might have gone for the touchdown on fourth-and-goal there. You know, that opening drive for Tulane was the definition of good process, bad results. The Wave moved the ball very well, and but for a missed chip-shot field goal, you know, would have accomplished the goal, whether by field goal or by daring, you know, fourth down conversion touchdown, they would have gotten on the board first and, you know, gotten their new starting quarterback some confidence. And you want to contrast that with the Cougars opening possession, where you did get a first down in the opening play, but for the fourth week in five, didn't at all come close to scoring any points. And I know there are a lot of red flags from this five-game season and from this game specifically, but, you know, I think looking at it now, I don't know if there's any more blatant red flag. If you just look at the season's data so far, it's just how bad the opening, you know, quote-unquote scripted drives have gone for the Cougar offense in 2022. I'm just going to, you know, go game by game here real quick. UTSA, offense goes three and out, actually goes backwards 5 yards. Texas Tech, offense goes three and out and punts. We'll give them some credit. Kansas here, go 9-play, 82 yards. You scored a touchdown, a Tazon Henry screen pass. Rice, you do get a first down, but stall, you know, in your own territory. In this one, Cougs get a first down, but again, stalled in their own territory. And, you know, for some reason, I randomly remember when he was U of H head coach, Kevin Sumlin harping on this a few times that, you know, the opening drive should be one of the hardest assignments your defense has. And excluding the Kansas game, this Cougar offense has generated 0 points and 2 first downs from, you know, 4 of your opening drives this season. And you can't really blame it on execution by players either, because only one of those opening possessions was, you know, one where the Cougars got off schedule because of penalty, the UTSA game. I think this just speaks so unequivocally to something that's fundamentally broken in this offense. And, you know, even though that's not convincing, even if you think I'm just kind of cherry-picking data here, I think the rest of this game would do the trick too. I mean, the overall numbers don't look terrible on paper, and, you know, I will say Tulane is a good defensive team. You know, there's a reason I think we hyped that side of the ball up a fair amount when we previewed them last week, but watching and rewatching this, and to me, it was less about the outcome and more about, you know, for the fact, you know, for the fifth game in a row, we saw an offense that looked mostly inept for first three quarters. You know, you only had one touchdown drive before the fourth quarter, you know, and that first through third quarter drive started deep into Tulane territory and just showed that same lack of creativity and urgency that's become really familiar. Yeah, 383 yards doesn't look bad against an opponent with a good defense, but I don't know. This felt like one of those times where the numbers were deceiving and you just didn't see anything that would give you I think any kind of hope over the remaining seven or so games that this Cougar offense was really any closer to figuring things out in this one than they were the last four.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's fair to compliment Tulane's defense like we did in the preview of this game, and that's it's a defense that's really improved since last season, has given some even a team like Kansas State some fits here. But I don't think it's a defense such that you would call a score, having not a touchdown drive of longer than 29 yards before the fourth quarter at home, not a disappointing performance. And it, you know, and you, but I think both sides of the ball, there are plenty of things to not be thrilled with after this one. The defensive side of the ball, you'd love to see them. And again, that wasn't the worst defensive performance ever. They had, you know, kind of,
no,
you know, the seven of Tulane's points came on a, you know, the fumble recovery touchdown. They did get set the offense up with a short field for that 29-yard touchdown drive in the second quarter. But, you know, just ultimately neither side getting the, being able to get the knockout blow, being able to, you know, the offense not scoring enough till, you know, not taking a lead until the last couple minutes of the game. And then the, you know, Cougar defense not being able to prevent yet another team from marching down the field and scoring right at the end of the game. And then, you know, it's kind of a, I don't know, as much as, people were quick to write articles about Dana Holgorsen's brilliant new overtime decision technique, it looks pretty silly when you get the ball first, you immediately run three plays that show a little imagination and go nowhere, and then kick a field goal and immediately give up a touchdown and lose. It makes your the overtime strategy look a little less innovative, I guess. I guess it's easy to cherry pick one result, but that was kind of the cherry, the bitter cherry to swallow on top of the Sunday that was a disappointing performance. And you know, I'd be remiss if we didn't mention it as well. It just, you know, as the game was going into overtime, and you know, I personally wasn't booing. I don't, you know, didn't choose to express myself that way in that moment. But you know, gosh dang, if people actually showed up to this game on a Friday evening at 6 o'clock, you know, a not super convenient to get to game to go watch a team that had been underwhelming, hoping to see them at least win a conference game at home against a team on its third string quarterback, and watching them march right down the field, give you a little bit of time left, and figuring, hey, maybe for once we'll actually do that thing that everybody always does to us and jump down the field and watch you just kind of shoot yourself in the foot with penalties and other nonsense. It's, man, I don't know, how are you gonna really, like, you think the problem that moment is that the fans are booing? I think the problem might be what the fans are booing, not that the fans are booing. And it's just the you know, angry gesturing by Dana Holgorsen, you know, the week after the "I don't take responsibility," it was just another week of not just the results being bad, but the juju around the program being bad also.
For me, the most damning thing about this specific week's really offense, defense, special teams, any on-field performance, just anything involving this game, was how much more comfortable I thought Tulane's OC, Jim Swoboda and Willie Fritz, were with an offense that was helmed by two backup quarterbacks who had extremely minimal game time. How much more they seemed to trust their two backup quarterbacks than U of H's offensive brain trust seemed to, you know, be with a quarterback who, it bears repeating, has been in the same system for 4 years, is in his fifth season with meaningful Division I action. I mean, if you were dropped in the stadium, Dustin, for this game in front of the TV, but you had no knowledge of either team, you just kind of knew the sport generally, but no specific knowledge of either, you know, the team in black or the team in white and olive green, would you believe that this U of H team was the team that had the veteran starting quarterback, a number of returning guys off of a 12-win team a year ago? I don't know if I would. I mean, it's just, it's really, really hard to think what's being done right now, whether it's offense, whether it's defense, whether it's just general how these guys are going about their business, is maximizing the abilities, you know, of all the offensive players, all the defensive players, all the players, period, in this program. It's something I think you've said a few weeks in a row on these episodes, that do you feel like the offense or defense right now are more, less, or equal to the sum of their individual parts? I don't think you can make case for more on either side of the ball. I don't even think really at this point you can make a case for, you know, equaling to about the amount. I just don't think, you're seeing in any facet the staff get the best out of these group of players. And I don't know if Dana Holgorsen is under the impression or thinks that the crowd's booing his players, but you know, I can't speak for every person who was present at TDCU who chose to do that last Friday night, but I would bet everything to my name that the majority of those people we're booing the head coach, we're booing the uncreative game plan, we're booing just booing probably their own decision to get this game on Friday at an inconvenient time, and see this coach who, you know, doesn't seem to have an idea of how to, you know, make this right. And before we get back to this game, I want to, you know, cast our minds back, Dustin, in time. We're going to all together, you and me and everyone listening, go back in time. We're going to go back specifically to January 2019. You're going to probably remember this is right after the firing of Major Applewhite, a week or so of pretty not subtle rumors that sitting West Virginia head coach, former Cougar assistant Dana Holgorsen, he finally makes it official. He's the new head football coach at the University of Houston. You know, they cut that quick video, posted on the football Twitter account. He tells Cougar fans, you know, let's go win some games. He kind of repeats that line he had said during the 2018 West Virginia win over the Longhorns in Austin. And to me, Dustin, that announcement was supposed to signify that U of H was, after, you know, a couple pretty, you know, lifeless seasons under Major Applewhite, you're going back to an era of, you know, brash, high-flying football, building a consistent winner with a guy who believes he can, you know, stick around and, you know, turn this program into a power, isn't going to jump at the first opportunity. And now, you know, we're moving ahead to 45 months later, and, you know, we go watch Friday a Holgorsen-led Houston team with a roster almost entirely of players recruited by the staff lose at home in a half-empty stadium to Tulane's third-string redshirt freshman quarterback and just look every bit as pedestrian and unimaginative as, you know, anything you saw during the worst stretches of Major Applewhite football. I think that's a big part of why the mood is so low on the most 30,000-foot level. It's more specific, or it's beyond this specific loss. It's not just specific to what we saw on Friday. Just everywhere you look and every facet you try to evaluate this program, there's just not much in the way of positives. And you mentioned discipline, and I just couldn't not talk about this without just looking at a few examples from this game. You had a false start in the opening second half possession, immediately put your offense that certainly didn't need the impediment behind schedule. You got a holding on third and short, which I mentioned earlier, at the Tulane 20, ultimately pushed the offense out of field goal range. And just that on the last possession of the fourth quarter, that successive holding and delay of game on a fourth quarter possession where U of H had an outside shot getting into field goal range. And you just see stuff like all of this. And then you see the head coach screaming and gesturing at a crowd that's understandably pretty fucking fed up with how the proceedings have gone. I mean, this is all just, I'm just talking about one specific incident here, but I guess how can you expect a team to really be composed at key moments when outwardly the CEO of the program is just, you know, showing so little composure? I don't know. I don't have an answer to that.
Yeah, not to circle back too much to the stuff we talked about after last week's game, but some of it certainly continues to be relevant. You know, after last week's game, you heard Dana Holgorsen talk at length, not just one little quote, but talk fairly at length about how frustrated he was with his job generally and how just irritated he was and how difficult college coaching is. And you know, I have no doubt that college, being a successful college football coach, is extremely freaking difficult. There's a lot of really smart, talented, driven people that are going to put in a lot of hours to try to be better than you at it. But this looks like a program led by a head coach who is just fed up and frustrated and, you know, going against hungrier head coaches and younger and more innovative head coaches and you know, guys who are embracing the grind of being a college coach more than it seems like Dana is really embracing and enjoying being a college football coach. And, you know, alluded to it up top, he's got a whole lot of money guaranteed left on his contract, 5 years after this season, still left on his contract, the majority of that money guaranteed. So it's, you know, I certainly think no matter how the rest of the season goes, I think it's going to be really, really hard for the administration to make a move. And, you know, unless it is the case that Dana Holgorsen is so frustrated and decides he's got enough money put away that he would rather not, you know, bang his head against that wall, for another season. But, you know, I think it is in all likelihood something that we're going to have to, you know, be kind of strapped in for in the long term. And it's a frustrating place to be watching your head coach, you know, just seem to be losing his cool week after week. And then also knowing that, you know, unless the administration finds some, a whole lot of money in the couch cushions, or, you know, Dan Holgorsen decides to leave a whole bunch of money on the table, that, you know, that this may be our reality as we head into the Big 12.
God, I don't disagree with a single word you just said. That's just, it's pretty grim, man. Like, and I don't think, maybe I was, you know, too optimistic, but I don't think, you know, I mentioned 45 months ago, I don't think you and I were just like, this is guaranteed to work. I don't think you and I are arrogant enough to think that any hire is that, you know, is a sure fire success, that any hire is just guaranteed to work. You know, you see so many programs out there with more resources than God, including a certain burnt orange program about 2.5 hours to the west of the Cougars, just be unable to put a consistent winning product in the field. So it's hard to do that, but I don't know if you or I would have seen this kind of schism between the fan base and this head coach happening. I mean, just, you know, this is a team that's dead last in Division I FBS in penalties per game right now, dead last in total number of penalties committed, and dead last in total penalty yards. That's a trifecta, Dustin. I mean, I did the numbers based on the penalty yardage averages of the, you know, five opponents we've seen to date. The Cougars are surrendering about 40 yards per game more in penalties. That's over half of a long offensive drive worth of free yards that this team is just giving opponents week in, week out. And yeah, I realize penalties and penalty yardage are, believe it or not, things that don't always reliably correlate to the team, you know, being good or bad. I mean, if you look at the top 25 right now, Oregon, Tennessee, Cincinnati are all teams that are in the bottom 20 nationally in most penalty stats, but are quite good top 25 programs. But, you know, I think when you're the absolute worst team in the country in every quantifiable way when it comes to, you know, being disciplined, which I think penalties are, you know, a pretty decent, you know, measure of, and you're struggling in all these other key areas, it just, everything's biting you in the margins. And I just, like you, I just, you know, sometimes you see a team that's, you know, had a 2-3 start and you think, okay, well, they're getting unlucky. I feel like if you go back in time for far enough, that 2006 Conference USA champion U of H team was kind of that team. They lost a couple games early in the season, but they were games where they pretty badly outplayed the opponent. And as frustrating as those were, you, from that team, you know, you saw games like the Oklahoma State game, you know, the opener against Tulane. So, okay, this team could be really freaking good on its day when it wants to be. We haven't seen that from this team, and we're now almost halfway through the season, Dustin, and I think I'm going to just at least end my thoughts on this in the grimmest note possible. And if I was a betting man, I don't think we're going to see it at all over the next 7 games.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard.
Would love to be wrong. Would love to be wrong.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We'll both be, you know, watching the games. I mean, you know, I'm living here in Houston. It's going to be easy as much as possible to try to attend the games and cheer on these players. And absolutely, I think these players are, you know, working hard and deserve to have fans show up to the game and cheer them on. So I'm not going to discourage anyone from, you know, following this team or checking out early or anything like that. You know, I do hope the players get some support. And obviously, like I said, I pretty much repeated myself from a week ago, but, you know, if programs that have consistent fan support, even when they're bad, don't stay bad for very long. So, you know, we do have the choice to do everything we can to try to support the players and everything, and the players that are going out there and going to continue to work hard in practice, going to continue to try to win games the rest of the year. But I think we can also be realistic about, you know, how likely the chances of seeing this team really achieve any of the goals that they themselves would have told you before the season were their goals. Doesn't seem like we're heading in that direction, to be completely honest, and probably understate the matter a little bit.
And I was going to say, you know, and I said those were my final thoughts, but I specifically hate this for guys like Tank Dell and like Donovan Mutant, because, you know, I'm not evaluating every single play that, you know, Donovan Mutant or Tank Dell have been on the field this year, but I believe every word of what those guys said in the preseason. Those guys left the field in Cincinnati and just badly burned to be the ones celebrating, that they stayed on the field because they didn't want to be, you know, they didn't want that to be, you know, what they got used to. They wanted to feel, you know, the burn in the offseason of seeing another team lift that conference title. I have no doubt about it. And I think what's so frustrating is I think the very well compensated people that, you know, whose job it is to maximize performance of these young men, I don't think we are entirely satisfied with it. I think the Cougar fan base at large is not entirely satisfied with it. And yet I think we're stuck here for the short and long term. And that's very unfortunate. I think it's no more unfortunate than it is guys like that, who I think are really great representatives of this university, are going to, you know, be robbed of the final season on campus that I think both guys deserved, and not for any lack of effort on their part.
All right, Sam, I think that is enough of that. I think it's a time we can go ahead and get some forward reviews and then go ahead and bury this game.
Let's do it.
All right, I'm going to start with Dan, who had got to watch more volleyball. And as well as Rick, was volleyball team looked good. That's where I want to start. That's the sport I honestly, I wish, before we came on the air, I was told Sam, I'm like, we're talking about volleyball tonight, right? Let's just forget that there's a football game. Let's talk Cougar volleyball.
I have those, real quick, I have those two forward reviews that you just read at the very end of mine because I wanted to try to end it on a happy note. I was just like, the only way we're going to end this on a happy note is talk about an entirely different sport. But I don't think it is a bad strategy to start out with a little bit of a positive note when you're going to be very hard to find the positives.
Yeah. Great Van Gundy throwing the early Dana Holgorsen reference with Who Wants to Redshirt. Jacob was disappointed, depleted, yet unsurprised. Sam, not Sam, my co-host, but Sam, our Twitter follower, had same stuff every week.
Yeah, would agree with that, Sam. Johnny had pretty simple, we are in trouble, Sergeant Awesome, the team is lost. Riley's Wisdom had still coming up short. I had a couple of ones about the specific sides of the ball. Space Coug did it in three words, had just in all caps, final drive defense. Yeah, hasn't been the best Space Coug. Jordan W. had what is offensive identity? Still don't know, Jordan. And a couple of y'all were thinking about basketball season, more than a couple of y'all, but I highlight these couple. Chris E. had 38 days left, referring to the men's basketball season start at the time of that tweet on November 7th against Northern Colorado. And our friend Ben had basketball season now, please.
Yeah, Nick wasn't impressed with going first in overtime. He had blamed the overtime study. the people of the Matadors had U of H ruined our win, and then Rock Chalk Podcast had unfortunately same for ours as they both got in. Yeah, just got in jokes on our behalf.
We're getting clowned on by Kansas football fans, and rightly so.
And rightfully so. Rightly so. You know what? You can't blame them. That's totally fair. Yeah. Timothy Brown had we iced our kicker. I guess that was it. And Tom had tantrums don't inspire confidence.
I had a couple more. Owen had flag on the field. Amir B, our good friend, had we're not that good. And a couple of y'all just really feeling the dumps about this. Copy Rapper had my heart is broken. Rev Coug had another new low point, and one guy, our longtime friend, MKE Coug, had came back to social media just to tweet at us, I'm just so tired. I'm flattered that you decided to come back to social media to do our cheap post-game bit. We really appreciate it, MKE Coug.
All right. We'll go ahead and end it there. I think that's a good one to end it on. So let's jump into some other Week 5 college football action. I got to say, you know, as someone who is a U of H fan, whose family is Iowa State fans, who's dating an Oklahoma fan, wasn't the most fun college football weekend of my life. Didn't really enjoy it all that much, to be completely honest. The other games from Thursday, yeah, Utah State lost to BYU, no surprise. Friday, Middle Tennessee, no match for UTSA, who held them off pretty much the entire game, 45-30. And then UCLA with kind of the big result. The only other game that really happened on Friday that we needs mentioning at all, UCLA winning the Battle of the Unbeatens, beating UW at home to improve to 5-0. So UCLA definitely been in a bit of a rut, and surprised to see the Bruins having a hard time, I think, drawing big crowds to the Rose Bowl. But 5-0, they'll likely be ranked at this point. So maybe it's apparently the Bruins are back for the first time in a while.
I was going to say, you know better than most that people from that part of the country love a winner. So, you know, they string together two or three more wins, you might see. I'm not going to say that UCLA football is going to be selling out the Rose Bowl by any stretch, but might see some decent crowds there. Certainly looked like a good team comfortably, although Washington made it look a little bit closer late than it probably was, but largely outplaying what's been a very good Washington team to this point. I think you were trying to needle me there by saying there was no other game worth talking about, Dustin. Just going to really quick throw in UNLV. First 4-1 start since 2003. Beat New Mexico 31-20 in a pretty down Mountain West, Dustin. Feeling pretty good about my Rebels' chances of bowl eligibility here.
All right. Getting into the Saturday games in the morning, we saw the Commander-in-Chiefs game between Navy and Air Force. Navy fell behind 10-0 early in that one. Then the defense stepped up. They ended up tying the game early in the fourth quarter, only to give up a game-winning field goal with a few minutes to go. Navy 1-3 now, had the chance to kind of, that was kind of their saving grace last year, and kind of a down season was at least the commander in chief success, but not so much this year. Don't really have that to hang their hat on. Offense still looking pretty underwhelming with Ty Lavitai running the show, and another loss for Niumatalolo, who not a coach trending in. If any coach in the American has a coach, if any school in the American has a coach trending less in the right direction than Houston does, it might be Navy.
We'll point out the last 2 weeks beating ECU at ECU.
That is true.
And like, this is a very good Air Force team. Like, I was surprised this was a game close enough that Air Force had to win on a late field goal, for being honest. Though the Commander-in-Chief games are always a little bit more competitive than you would expect just based on what the team does against everyone else. So,
fair enough. Also in the early game, Memphis beating Temple 24-3. Not too much of a surprise. We'll probably talk a little bit more about that as Memphis is Houston's next opponent. Talk about that on Wednesday evening. But yeah.
Just got to mention real quick, Tigers down 3-0 at the half in this one.
Yeah, a really, really strange result before the offense kind of showed up late. So not quite sure what to make of that, but, it's Temple, and you kind of figured they were never going to score a whole lot more than 3 points. So gave Memphis plenty of time to come back and figure that one out. Really, I think the most stunning result from early in the day, though, has to be what I mentioned to, Oklahoma losing 55-24 to TCU, a game that was worse than that score indicates, if anything. Even that was, Oklahoma scoring. That was TCU not scoring any points in the fourth quarter. The Sooners getting a late touchdown just to pull within 31 points as they lost to the now 4-0 Horned Frogs. Got just baffling to me. And even as my first real season as a tertiary OU fan, you just kind of assume that, okay, the Sooners, they always recruit at the high level. Whoever is out there at any given time, whoever they roll out, throw out there, is going to be some 4 or 5 star recruit. And, they just hired Brent Venables, one of the most well-respected defensive coordinators in the country. And then, man, just between the Kansas State game last week and now the TCU game, it's like, how are all those ingredients combining together to make a defense that is that bad? It's truly, truly baffling.
And just 2 weeks in a row, come on here. I think 2 weeks ago against K-State, I was like, okay, well, a K-State team that really can't pass the ball isn't going to be able to do much to Oklahoma, and they run roughshod over them in Norman. And it's like, okay, last week I'm like, okay, but TCU is going to have, Oklahoma's full attention after that K-State game. And if anything, they just performed far, far, far worse than they did against K-State. TCU going for 300 yards, at least rushing and passing, to almost have 700 yards of offense, to, like you said, have absolutely taken the foot very much off the gas in the fourth quarter. Yeah, just a very baffling result. I've seen some people, it's not the crazy thing to say, for Oklahoma to truly get SEC ready, they have to kind of get humbled and realize that, this, from Bob Stoops to Lincoln Riley, this isn't just a well-oiled machine, and you need to make improvements and blah blah blah, and just you can't rely on being Oklahoma and being this program with incredible history, and you're about to go to a much tougher league. But yeah, I don't know, man. You don't want to ever criticize any coach too much in the first year, and any first year coach, although I know Venables did turn over the roster a fair amount there. Again, you give a coach a lot more than 1 year to truly judge their impact on the program, but God, did Lincoln Riley leave it that bare that, just getting smoked like this to TCU? Is that really that bad? I know they had some bad defenses there, but really the cupboard was that bare in Norman, huh? Also, I would just say, Dustin, you mentioned earlier, specifically, with your new wonderful significant other, Dustin, you mentioned being a tertiary Oklahoma fan. How long is it till you start calling Lincoln Riley, what do they call him, TBW, TBOW, is that, are you ever going to reach that level of OU fan specifically?
No, I don't. I actually have no idea what you're talking about with that, so I think I'm probably safe from getting to that.
Good.
To that point.
Perfect.
For now.
Wonderful.
My level of OU fan is when the game is on, I will sit next to my partner and put my arm around her and cheer for the Sooners with her and hope that they win, and at the end of the game, that'll be it. I'm not gonna turn into a message board or OU fan or anything like that. I think we're probably safe.
Damn it. It's a good decision. As much as I would find it very funny if you did become like a message board OU fan. All right, let's move on from this game. Sorry, I'm going way too much on OU TCU.
So around another American result, ECU beating South Florida 48-28, a game that was even less close than that. ECU 41 first half points before the Bulls got some kind of whatever points late in this one. I will revise my earlier statement. If there's any coach in a worse place in the American than Ken Niumatalola or Dan Olgerson, it is Jeff Scott, who was, against an ECU team that you needed their kind of get-right game after losing against Navy, as we mentioned, found a significantly easier opponent even than the midshipmen in USF and just thrashed them until the game was well out of hand early.
It's time. It's time. I think I don't know if Jeff Scott is going to be getting a second FBS win as USF head coach. This was kind of like last week. This wasn't a must-win game. ECU is a much improved team, really, outside of that loss to Navy. I think they've shown themselves to be one of the better American teams this year, but this was a must-not-get-your-butt-kicked game, and USF just unequivocally got their butt kicked.
And then I got to mention it. Kansas improves to 5-0 with a 14-11 win over Iowa State. Jayhawks got a couple of touchdowns in the second quarter to take a 14-0 lead. Iowa State got their lone touchdown late in the second quarter and then had a bad snap on the extra point, which turned into an impromptu two-point conversion to make pull within 14-8, but got only a field goal in the third quarter. Iowa State misses three field goals down the stretch, including a 37-yarder with a chance to tie late. You held Jalen Daniels in Kansas to 14 points. Like, you'd take that any day of the week. I guess probably on Saturday, if we're talking about college football. Maybe that's a bad expression to use when talking about college football. You take that any time. I think any team in the country would be pretty happy holding Jalen Daniels in Kansas to 14 points, which is a remarkable but true statement. When you score 11, it doesn't matter. So congrats to Kansas. As frustrated as I am as an Iowa State fan, it's always fun to see the, historically unsuccessful programs thriving. And it's really, really hard to say that as both a Houston and Iowa State fan now. But I am gritting my teeth as best I can to, cheer on Jalen Daniels the rest of the way.
God, I didn't even think about that. You've gotten them now like two times in the last 3 weeks. You've gotten to see Kansas beat.
And they're still playing Oklahoma this year. They might triple up on me. It is entirely within the realm of possibility.
Whew, did not even consider that. Yeah, just wild enough. Not the first 14-11 final score of a game this century. I don't want to make any game about one specific decision, but I had a hard time with it in real time. I still have a hard time with it now that Matt Campbell on fourth and short set out a kicker who had just missed his two prior field goals. And yeah, I realized it was inside 40 yards. And if you give a scholarship to a kicker, you want to see him hit that. But really felt like Iowa State had enough time there to go for it and still try to get the win or at least get something, approaching a better kick. And I mentioned in the pregame for this, it was a matchup of that, really interesting, creative Kansas offense versus Iowa State's defense with John Haycock. And I would say Iowa State's defense very much won that head-to-head, but just unfortunately just couldn't do enough offensively to get it over the line. And Lawrence, just wild swing, Dustin, that this was a 59-7 Iowa State win last year and that we had this absolutely, super close, super interesting, and I'm sure just pure torture if you're a fan of these two schools kind of game.
All right, some other afternoon action from Saturday. Cincinnati with a 31-21 road win at Tulsa. A game that certainly made you think that, even with, some of the significant losses to graduation that Cincinnati's had, that they still have a pretty solid team, looked in control in this one. And just really, just what they did to Davis Brin of Tulsa in this one, a quarterback that's had some success this year, completing just half, 18 of his 36 passes for just 237 yards, two picks, nine sacks on the day in this one, really struggling to get going. And road win for Cincinnati, their fourth straight win since they lost at Arkansas to open the season. And talked about it last week, but the Bearcats continue to look for all their losses to graduation and everything. They look like the team that's been recruiting at a different level than the rest of the American in terms of the way that they seem to have weathered all those losses.
Yeah, they got a lead early in this one. They never really felt like they were going to give it up, but never totally pulled away, just totally put Tulsa in the rear views, but I think that's the sign of a, you know, good to very good team. If you can not have your best effort in certain phases, they had a lot of penalties. They, you know, just played sloppy at times, but were never really challenged on the road against, I would say, it's not overhyping Tulsa to say a top half of the conference team, potentially top four or five in the conference team. Certainly we saw a lot of good stuff in the several weeks prior to that. And that since he was able to win and able to win in a manner where you really never doubt that they were going to win, yeah, I think speaks well to that team and them certainly being by now, you know, your favorite to, you know, be holding the conference crown when it's all said and done in December.
And then certainly a game that I didn't really get to watch much of, but certainly caused me to scratch my head on Saturday afternoon. How about number one Georgia going on the road to Missouri, a Missouri team that has just looked lousy, just got thrashed by Kansas State, was just 2-2 coming into this one, hosting number one Georgia at home, a team that's just been pulverizing teams. You think this one is going to be an absolute laugher. Georgia didn't get into the end zone until the fourth quarter. At the beginning of the fourth quarter, Missouri was winning this one 22-12 on four Georgia field goals. They had not gotten into the end zone before. Unfortunately, they rallied for two late touchdowns to take a 26-22 victory. So you avoid just somehow the just absolutely uber upset to end all upsets, but maybe a bizarre indicator. I mean, again, maybe you just have one-off games where weird stuff happens, but maybe a bizarre indicator that Georgia is not quite the complete otherworldly juggernaut that they had looked to up until this point.
Yeah, I know I just waxed poetical about Cincy, you know, being able to win ugly and outlast an opponent on the road, but I feel like the Georgia-Missouri kind of matchup, it would be like, you know, akin to Cincy letting Temple hang around for, you know, 3.5 quarters of the game. Like, yeah, you got the win, but is this revealing, you know, is this revealing some cracks in the armor? Is this revealing that maybe you're not this just otherworldly, you know, football version of a killing machine that we thought, you know, Georgia was after winning the CFP last year, after, you know, just eviscerating Missouri, or excuse me, Oregon and Atlanta in week one? I don't know. I think, like you said, it could either be that, you know, this was the sign that Georgia just really, you know, maybe didn't have their stuff figured out as much offensively and is going to have to win some, you know, rock fight, you know, late aughts, early tens, Bama kind of games, or this is just one of those weird one-offs and you're like, yeah, remember when Georgia in week five really struggled to beat Missouri in Columbia? I really don't know which one it is at this point, although, you know, we'll say Georgia last week, you know, let Kent State hang around a lot longer than most people probably expected Kent State to hang around. So I don't know, maybe a trend, maybe just two weird data points when it's all said and done.
And then did want to give the Crosstown Nerds a little bit of credit here as Rice beat UAB 28-24 at home. Owls getting the fourth quarter touchdown to come from behind in this one and make a nice second half comeback in this one after trailing 17-7 at the half. And yeah, I mean, Rice suddenly after the, you know, the season opening butt kicking at the hands of USC, done, you know, looking pretty respectable, getting a nice win over Louisiana Lafayette, beating UAB here to start conference play. Conference USA play 1-0, and you know, you look at Conference USA, not that strong of a conference as a whole. Rice's next three teams that they face, Florida Atlantic, La Tech, Charlotte, all looking pretty human and beatable. I think Rice, even with two of those three on the road, could very well be favored in their next three games. So don't look now, but Mike Bloomgren might have something approaching a pretty respectable season here for the Owls yet.
Yeah, UAB is one of the most consistent commodities in Conference USA, and that the Owls have now beat them 2 years in a row. You know, I don't know, maybe Mike Bloomgren really has something cooking over there. Dustin, I wanted to, speaking of woebegone Division I FBS programs, did you see who for the first time in over 1,000 days beat an FBS opponent that's part of a conference on Saturday?
Oh, I did not.
The UConn Huskies beat Fresno State. Again, for the first time, I think it was 1,000 and something days, they beat an opponent that wasn't like UMass. That's an FBS team. Pretty awful stuff if you're Fresno State. You know, a program that's actually been pretty good in the Mountain West the last few years, to take that non-conference loss to what's been consistently one of the, you know, biggest doormats in Division I FBS. But I don't know, maybe Jim Mora might have, you know, something going there here in the next few years. But that was just one of those, like, I was scrolling through my The Score app and just, like, stopped. I was like, wait, I didn't even see it happen live. I was like, wait. UConn won a game against a Division I FBS team that's been decent in the last 5 years?
Right? I was like, if
just truly, truly bizarre stuff.
If I hadn't seen the Fresno score, I would have, and you just said, oh, UConn beat an FBS opponent, I would have just reflexively asked you which MAC team that they had beaten. But beating A, what are they doing playing Fresno in the first place? But and B, what are they doing actually beating Fresno? Definitely a surprise result for the Huskies. Couple of interesting Big 12 results for the future conference. Kansas State, 37-28 win over Texas Tech. Really nice win for the Wildcats there that lost to Tulane. You know, even with Tulane also winning this past week, just gets more and more inexplicable. That offense looks pretty solid. I know it was kind of stop and go for the Jayhawks, and this one really got going early and then kind of faltered in the middle. It certainly looked like Texas Tech was kind of taking this one over before Kansas State kind of got it going again late, but they improved to 4-1. They're already top 25 before that win. That'll only help them there. And then also, Oklahoma State getting the win in Waco, 36-24. A big, really dramatic 39-point third quarter in this one with a lot of action. So certainly plenty of drama in this one, but the Cowboys ultimately coming up on top and, improving to 4-0. And they've looked a little bit rocky at times in some of these results, but at the end of the day, 4-0 is 4-0, getting a road win over Baylor. Awfully impressive, and your Oak States and your Kansas State, the state programs, certainly looking like two of the more fearsome programs in our future conference at the moment.
Yeah, and that Texas Tech K-State game, I was kind of hoping for an interesting contrast, that air raid Texas Tech offense against the very run-heavy but very creative run-heavy stuff that K-State does, and Adrian Martinez and Deuce Vaughn combined for 341 rush yards in this one. Tech, Donovan Smith threw for over 300 as well. It was the definite contrast that I was hoping for in the early slot there. And even though it never really looked like K-State was going to lose this one, Tech didn't go quietly. I thought acquitted themselves fairly well against what's looked like a very good team every week other than the week that K-State faced Tulane. And yeah, that Oak State-Baylor game, I think, was a bit closer than you'd think from that 11-point margin. And I think my general takeaway is that this OSU team looks a lot more than like your typical Mike Gundy team there, and that they're a good and explosive offense. Last year's team really felt like they were doing just the bare minimum offensively with this just otherworldly Jim Knowles defense, and I feel like the offense has gotten a bit closer to what you would normally expect from a Mike Gundy team. But the defense after that maybe sketchy start against Central Michigan week one, I think still retained some of the DNA of that very good defense from last year's team. I think a statement win for the Pokes, certainly, and proof positive that they can expect to be around the Big 12 championship again come early December.
The only other result, and you can tell me if I missed any other good ones here, Sam, was that I have down was Georgia Tech, after firing their head coach, turning around and beating a top 25, technically Pitt team on the road, 26-21, just kind of a low scoring game in most of this one until the Yellow Jackets got a couple of touchdowns early in the fourth quarter to get the win and make interim coach Brent Key a winner. So, yeah, you never know. It's always fun to see what happens. It's one of those fun little college sports things is when you do see the coach get fired. Sometimes you see the team really kind of rally around and feel like they've got nothing to lose the rest of the way and go out and play hard and play loose, and certainly look like that for the Yellow Jackets. And in terms of programs, P5 programs that struggle to win games, that's certainly one of the ones up there on the list. So I thought that was kind of fun watching them come together and get the win there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The only other game of note I have is one actually I grouped with the one you just mentioned, Nebraska beating Indiana by 14, another interim head coach win, the first one for Nebraska interim head coach Mickey Joseph. And like you, just kind of enjoy to see a team rally around their head coach. Not an important mention, I think worth mentioning last. Arizona beats Colorado 43-20. Colorado fires their head coach on Sunday, and Arizona basically tops their expected Vegas win total, which was 2.5, basically everywhere you'd look, 5 weeks into the season, which I don't know what they're going to be this year under Jed Fish, but I feel like that Arizona has 3 wins in their first 5. I feel like that's already him showing proof of concept. That's him already showing that maybe he might be able to do something. That's what's been a pretty difficult place to win historically.
Yeah, I mean, I think he you know, in this week at least, and I don't want to crap too much on what Jed Fish is doing over there, because I think it's, I agree with you.
Might not be very many wins after this one.
There might not be, but I mean, yeah, sure, you know, beating North Dakota State is no, the fact that if you're a first-year head coach coming to a P5 program with not a ton of talent on the roster and you're playing North Dakota State, I would be like, is there any amount of money that we can scrounge together to get the game off the schedule at the last second? But he won that game. Honestly, that win's significantly more impressive for me than beating a Colorado team that just looks like, my brain
doo-doo.
It's late, and so my brain tried and failed to come up with a good analogy for a way to say that his team is just absolutely terrible, but Colorado was just absolutely terrible at football this year. So yeah, three wins, good for you, topping your win total and all that, but man, that Colorado team is just so bad.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, I don't know why we're ending this episode on Colorado and how terrible they are at football, but that's what we're going to do. So on our way out, we're going to give a big salute and a hearty thank you to our Patreon supporters, Scott and Holman Podcast Patreon supporters, my absolute favorite people on the planet. Don't tell my partner or my parents or my family that, but it's you guys. If you do enjoy this podcast enough and you want to put some money behind it, we would love for you to go to shpodcast.com/support. You will find a link to make a recurring monthly donation on Patreon. You can also send a one-time tip our way via PayPal. You can also buy some merchandise with our street sign and a logo on it. We also do love hearing from you, the listener. You can email us, shpodcast@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at shpodcast. That's absolutely it for us. If you made it this far, you are the absolute greatest. And as always,
go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Vamos los Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
We ain't invited to the party. We had to kick the door in. No cap. No cap. No cap.